Welcome to the Bone Health Basement Tapes, a conversation about the future of bone health. Bone health is the foundation of movement, longevity, and quality of life. But are we doing enough to protect it? The Bone Health Basement Tapes explores cutting-edge osteoporosis prevention, AI-driven diagnostics, and breakthrough bone health technologies. Hosted by experts, each episode features researchers, clinicians, and tech pioneers reshaping how we assess, monitor, and deliver bone health care. Join us as we decode the future of bone health, one conversation at a time. Welcome to the basement. The Bone Health Basement Tapes is a presentation of the American Society of Osteoporosis Providers and the Digital Bone Health Study Group. Welcome to another episode of the Bone Health Basement Tapes, where we explore the latest advancements, challenges, and innovations in osteoporosis and bone health. I'm Pete Bianco, and today we have a fantastic discussion lined up featuring Jared Torkelson, who's the Minnesota Orthopedic APP Supervisor at Mayo Clinic Health Systems and instructor of orthopedics at the Mayo Clinic Alex School of Medicine. Jared is also president of the American Society of Osteoporosis Providers. Also joining us today is Dudley Phipps, who's also the CEO and executive director of ASOP. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hi, Pete. Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Despite decades of effort, osteoporosis care has remained stagnant in many ways. Is it time to move beyond traditional T-score measurements and instead focus on comprehensive risk assessment, value-based care, and sustainable patient outcomes? Today, we'll try to answer that question and discuss the coming transformation of bone health from a reactive approach to proactive system-wide healthcare model. But before we do that, Jared, I'd like you to kind of take us through your experience, your practice at Mayo Health Systems, and what led you to ASOP and this particular topic in particular.
Yeah, so I have been a physician associate in orthopedic surgery for the last 9 years. One of my jobs is I work with a complex hip and knee surgeon here. So we do primary hip and knee and revision hip and knee along with some trauma that comes in. My other job is I run our bone health clinic. So it's a comprehensive clinic looking at our fracture patients and doing some bone optimization as well. Because we have a lot of the same problems that are around the rest of the nation, that there's more fracture patients and patients that are at risk of fracture than there are providers that are going to treat it. So about 7 years ago, I was on a call weekend and we had a lot of hip fractures, and I made the mistake of saying, gosh, there's got to be something we can do about it. And Monday morning, Dr. Swinkowski's paper from JBJS came up about fracture liaison services, and I took it and ran with it. So since then, we've expanded our clinic to another site. We've seen hundreds of patients at this point. I am booked out 3 months. So the patients are out there. They're very appreciative. You know, a lot of the patients we see that they said, gosh, I wish I did this or something like this years ago if they've had a first fracture, or they're very excited to do something about it if it is their initial fracture. So, that's what I've been doing. I've enjoyed it. It was kind of daunting in the beginning, and then realizing kind of the community that's in there to support you and do things around has been great. And then now this opportunity with ASOP, with Dudley, we can really make a change and try and make some benefit here in this community.
Well, that's great. So is your practice mostly fracture liaison secondary fracture prevention or primary, or what's the ratio between the two?
Yeah, mostly fracture prevention in our fracture patients. So I don't do a lot of primary osteoporosis just because of availability. So, we started off getting all of our wrist fracture patients, hip fracture patients, and then it went on to proximal humerus and then anything else. And now we're, our health system developing a comprehensive spine center. So we're going to start seeing, all of our vertebral fracture patients where before they were kind of trickling in. So it's a lot of patients after that initial fracture. So we can talk about why they have a risk, what happened, what got them there, and what we can do about it.
So what's the geographical footprint of what you cover here? Because it says here you're the Minnesota Orthopedic APP's supervisor. I know you're based in Mankato. What does that mean beyond that?
Yeah, so my footprint for my FLS is a large chart, the southwestern Minnesota. you know, we have our endocrine colleagues in Rochester, but the health system, it's only myself and one other endocrinologist within our region. So it's a large impact. It's a lot of smaller communities, which is something, you know, rural health is something that I care deeply about. I'm from a small community. My wife's from a small community. So we know what happens when you can't see the care that you need, especially, you know, preventative care, like what the osteoporosis is. So it's a big footprint. There's a lot of patients. We need more people doing this because I know that we're not seeing all of them.
Well, yeah, and you and I have talked about this before about the kind of the rural healthcare kind of profile of your specific practice, and what we're talking about at ASOP, I think really is a good fit for rural health.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a lot of these smaller communities are getting older or are already old. So it's a lot of patients that are 50s and 60s and they've lived there or they were born there. You know, it's a smaller community. Right. It's hours to their, you know, ears hospital. It's an hour to come and see us. So COVID put a, you know, big wrench in things, but one of the things that came out of it accelerated the use of telehealth, which has been huge. Right. There's still the patients that they're not comfortable with it, and I get that. So they're driving in to see us, and for whatever reason, you know, last week had the big snowstorm. The ones that didn't cancel were 70 plus, because that's just what they do. But those are the patients that need to be seen in programs like this. You know, they're the ones that are high risk. They're the ones that if something happens, their resources are pretty minimal in the communities that they're in. So preventative medicine is a huge thing within rural healthcare as well.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the concept of telehealth, because that's our episode number three is our next one I'm really excited about, but we're not going to go there today. So the current landscape of osteoporosis and bone healthcare, let's talk about that. And a lot of what I, you know, when I've gotten into this and talking to people about how stagnant it is, I mean, I can't use another word. It seems stagnant. There hasn't been a lot of progress over the years. And now we have a lot of digital technology and AI, which is one of the core things that ASOP is very interested in. So why is that? Why has the traditional osteoporosis care, why has that become stagnant? And I'll throw that out for both of you.
You know, I'll take that one. I'll start with it. We have put an incredible amount of resources into creating fracture liaison services. Now, some of those work really well, but we can't capture all the fractures because we don't have enough staffing. And over the last few years, as the population ages and I have more fractures, I have the same number or fewer providers engaging in osteoporosis. So our engagement rate continues to go down. The other problem is we have traditionally looked at osteoporosis management from three positions that patients come from: secondary fracture or fracture liaison services. We talk about primary prevention, and I think everybody has given up on primary prevention. And the newcomer to the block is preoperative bone health risk assessment and optimization. Once I get past the engagement with the provider phase, all three of these look the same whenever we treat them in clinic.
Right. Yeah.
So we have focused on that fracture liaison service. I think we need to figure out what the shortcomings are of the ecosystem of osteoporosis in the U.S., address the shortcomings, and move this forward.
Jared, you have something to say about that?
I think the piece with bone optimization, you know, a lot of good data is coming out of the University of Wisconsin looking into that, but we need to think about that. Yes, it's to improve outcomes of total knee, but we need to also look at that as a touch point, right? So if you're seeing these patients, these, you know, total knee and total hip patients or arthroplasty patients in general are getting younger, you know, they're 40 or 50. If you can do this as a screening tool in a younger patient, we can find these patients before that initial fracture, which I think that's a big piece of what that can be down the road, or at least start that conversation to get people thinking about it. So I think bone optimization is huge. You know, to Dudley's point, it's stagnated because we only did it one way. We knew how to do an FLS, a good FLS as well. It's tough to find that data though, right? You know, if you look at orthopedic numbers, so with my clinic, I had a tough time to justify in the beginning because the rough numbers are I could be reducing cases, right? And a lot of my metrics is based on what are we generating for cases. But it's that back end cost you're saving, which can be millions of dollars that we need to look at as well too. So There's a lot of pieces with it. You know, the AI piece too, I think you can breathe a lot of life into a lot of specialties, but FLS is one about finding the patients. But to talk about our mission with ASOP too, we can find these patients all day. We know where to find them, but we don't have the people to treat them.
Right, so, right.
Yeah. Treat them and they're educated appropriately and that get passionate about this like Dudley and I have. That's really our goal with ASOP.
So ultimately, and we're talking about something where it's going to increase the volume of patients coming in. We need new tools, I assume, to help manage that. That's obviously something that we're very interested in working on. But you know, and to just to back up for a minute, Jared, you know, in your practice, let's talk a little bit about complication risk reduction instead of just measuring bone density. What are you using now? What technology do you have? What densitometry are you using? And how would you see something like that incorporated into a model where there's a higher volume of patients coming through?
Yeah. So in our clinic, we don't do a lot of bone optimization, again, just because we don't have the space for it. But the ones that we do, we're using the data looking at what's your frac score without DEXA. So we're very fortunate to have a joints coordinator. And one of her jobs I've asked her to do is that while she's evaluating our patients, whether they're same day patients or staying overnight, she calculates their frac score. So I can look through, you know, preoperatively and postoperatively and say this patient needs to be seen, which is a lot better than being, you know, done your femur and tibia cuts going, ah, this bone's bad. Maybe we should do something.
Right.
And that way too, even after surgery, the surgeon I work with can say, hey, you know, your bone's not great. We're going to set up an appointment with you to see Jared in 4 weeks or 6 weeks to talk about this if something bad doesn't happen in the future. I'm also a big proponent on, using, CT, secondary CT or quantitative CT when we can get it. You know, I think that's something down the road as we understand it more can be really used, especially in our spine patients. And then I also use a lot of, I mean, every patient that walks into the ER gets an abdomen CT, right? So then using that for a screening tool, going to L1, measuring the Hounds blood units is huge as well. Just to get the patients into the door, you know, in your insurance things too. But that's typically what I'm using that's working well. Dudley, I guess I don't know if you're using anything different or something else that's unique.
We were using a combination of DEXA, VFA, trabecular bone scoring, and CT-based Hounsfield units. Part of the problem that you have is the World Health Organization has blessed DEXA as the gold standard. And it was the gold standard 20 years ago or 25 years ago, but that standard hasn't changed with the technology. So DEXA is an okay test. I have no problem with DEXA as long as you understand the limitations and really know how to interpret the data. And that's part of the problem is, I think, leads us to part of the problem. We don't have providers, and we don't have providers that have a baseline of knowledge. The right side of the hallway does it differently than the left side of the hallway. And never the two shall meet. And that's really a challenge to develop any consistency in the field and develop standards of care.
Right. So just to shift a little bit here. So we've talked a lot about the need for a shift from medical practice model to a comprehensive healthcare business model. What does that mean from your perspective?
Well, osteoporosis is a business. It's a service line just like every other medical service line. In today's healthcare environment, at the worst, you can be revenue neutral. But if you're going to be a sustainable practice, you have to be revenue positive. And we have to look at revenue trends for every service line in order to support the ecosystem. Not only of osteoporosis, but really a practice in general. They just can't bleed money because there's an altruistic reason to do this.
Yeah. A lot of it's value anymore, right? So it's not the bottom line. It's what value does it bring to the patient? There's not a, the amount of osteoporosis patients isn't going down. The amount of hip fractures isn't going down.
So no, yeah.
those patients are there. And they keep falling. And I don't know about you guys, but gravity isn't changing anytime soon either. So they're there to be had. It's just, you know, we need to get a little bit smarter on the metric side looking at it. It's got to be a little more creative. And down the road, and value doesn't always have to be mean money from that fracture patient too. Value can be reducing days in the hospital. Value can be the resources that those patients, you know, typically need while they're in the hospital, right? They're typically older patients. They need more care. They may need more resources, and saving that on the back end, that brings tremendous value in the long run.
Right. So moving on, we've kind of, you know, are kind of framing out at ASOP something we call the five pillars of success, a new framework for OBH. And I think that a lot of that, I think, has been, you know, wrapped in this discussion of new technologies on the horizon and the ability to find patients in the preoperative workflow or wherever using standard x-rays or something like that, that has also kind of stimulated a discussion around, in some respects, re-engineering how we do all this, right? And so the five pillars of success, Dudley, I know you've been one of the main, both of you have been the main architects of that. Can you kind of walk us through what that is and how you see that impacting bone health care going forward?
So the five pillars consist of patient identification. So if the patient has a fracture and they fall into the pathway for an FLS, that would be identification. We have technology that can help with the identification as well. Enterprise and professional education. So let's start with the enterprise, because to me, that is a critical step. Whenever the C-suite sits down and says, okay, we're gonna support a trial of an FLS service. Here's one person, go. A lot of times that's the only information they have. And unfortunately, osteoporosis and bone health throw money into many different buckets of the organization. And right, all of those need to be lumped together to measure the financial success of the service line. So we have to educate the C-suite so we get the metrics right, so they can project and plan accordingly for profit and loss, patients encountered, staffing requirements, what technology am I going to bring to bear? So there's a lot there. And then the provider education. I am a staunch supporter of certification. I think that's the only way that we finally get some standardization of osteoporosis and bone health is through standardized training and certification level testing. The last two steps, three steps, patient engagement. Now I'm going to have a patient sit in front of Jared to talk about their fracture and what are we going to do to prevent it from happening again. That's the bone density testing, the blood work, the planning, engaging in a treatment plan. Next step is patient retention as well as staff retention. I see over and over FLS services start, and I'll hear from the champion of the program that, you know, I've had five people in there, and they were in there for a month, and then they were gone. And oftentimes, that's because the provider they put in felt overwhelmed. They had too many patients and not enough comfort level in their training to address the patient needs. And finally, and probably most importantly, how to set up that metric to show if you have a successful service line.
Right.
Be that fracture reduction, financially, whatever it is, whatever you set that metric up as an institution or societally, if we look at overall reduction in fracture risk, it's just setting the metrics.
That seems to be a really hot topic. I just got back from the academy, as you guys know, and then I had a lot of conversations with people in the bone health space. There was actually a session with Dr. Anderson there about bone health optimization and this topic of being able to calculate your financial position consistently in that seems to be something that has really got people. It's got a lot of people's attention right now with the capability of doing that. And I think also, you know, the ability to justify to the management of your hospital or whatever it is, your clinic, that you are actually profitable, despite the fact that a lot of the revenue is being thrown off into other service lines, is really, really key for these people now. And it's a really hot topic. So let's get back to the original topic here about, you know, moving beyond T-score measurements and instead focusing on comprehensive risk assessment. What does that mean in your view of this, and what are the implications?
Yeah, I mean, those of us in medicine have heard the additive, you know, treat the patient, not the number. But this is a scenario we're still treating a number. You know, a patient with a T-score of -2.3, but they have the propensity of falling a lot. You know, that's somebody I'm going to lean towards treating, or maybe they're a heavy smoker. Because not all these patients have a DEXA. You know, if you have a lumbosacral fusion and your hips are replaced, maybe you have some, you know, some wrist pathology or something, I got nothing to do anymore. So I can't even use the DEXA. And body habit matters too. I mean, there's a lot more things that matter than just the T-score. Plus you're at the whim of your imaging facility too. You know, we're fortunate enough here in our region, we have really good DEXA techs and a good team, but that's not the case everywhere.
Well, I was always taught that whenever I was looking at x-rays, that's just a piece of the puzzle. Treat the patient, not the x-rays. And the same holds true for me for osteoporosis. It's exciting to me that we finally have guidelines that have come out that have talked about risk stratification and treatments based on risk stratification rather than just a silly T-score. So I think we're slowly moving in that direction, but I think there's a lot more to be done. I think too many people look at a T-score, and again, I think that falls back on that educational component.
Yeah. Dudley, did you ever ask the question, because I asked this to all my patients, that when they come in, and even before I pulled the DEXA scan, I asked, did anybody ever go through this with you? And then answer 9 times out of 10 said, no, they just looked at the thing and kept going. So I think educating even the patient on what you're talking about and what it is, so that matters with it too.
I tried to avoid a specific DEXA conversation. I talked more about when you were between 25 and 30, you had peak bone mass. And as you age, as you have more birthdays, you're no longer building bone faster than you're losing bone. And as you lose testosterone or you go through menopause, tear down speeds up and building continues to slow down. So you continue to lose bone. And I might put it in kind of a percentage, you know, knowing that one standard deviation is typically 10 to 20% loss. You've lost 20% of the bone you should have had when you were 30. But I don't get into the weeds very often as far as a specific T-score. Because we don't do that in any other disease state. We talk about risk. Yeah, we can talk a little bit about labs and we can talk a little bit about testing, but at the end of the day, it's a risk discussion.
And that's what you mean by moving beyond the T-score in this scenario, right? It's more about fracture risk.
Mm-hmm. It is. Or even the fracture you've had, right? We know that an initial fracture of your spine puts you at a 7-time risk of another spine fracture.
Your folks's hip fracture.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of historic things that we find that have a significant impact. And for example, if you're a smaller person, if you weigh 100-pound female, and you've always been 100 pounds, you were 90 pounds whenever you were 25 years old, you never reached peak bone mass. Because there's certain things that you have to do in order to reach peak bone mass. And one of those is you have to carry at least 127 pounds of weight. You have to have a certain number of heel strikes. You got to have nutritional things. You've got to have some wellness things to reach peak bone mass. But if you never got to peak bone mass, you will never have peak bone mass beyond that point. So maybe a -2.5 or -3 is the patient's norm. maybe I look at that bone density that says -3, but they have no risk factors. They've never had a fracture. They've never lost height. I have a hard time getting real worked up that that patient is at a gigantic risk for fracture.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, I mean, DEXA is the population study, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, all that stuff. And it's about the population of somebody that weighs that much and is that tall. So to look at a T-score doesn't really individualize the care. You know, you got to look at the whole thing. It's got to be comprehensive.
Well, that moves into the discussion of how we move towards value-based care in this space, right?
Yeah, and absolutely. I mean, this brings tremendous value on the back end for so many reasons. I mean, those of us in the bone field know that there's way more patients affected by osteoporosis than cardiovascular disease. You know, standard of living and how you're living your life matters too. You know, unfortunately, I mean, I was on call last weekend and we had a few hip fractures that come in. I've never had a hip fracture patient tell me that they were afraid to die. I've had a lot of hip fracture patients tell me they're afraid they're not going home.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. People never want to lose their car keys and they never want to live in the nursing home.
Mm-mm. And they will fight you tooth and nail on that. And then Absolutely. You have a 7-year-old that says they're ready to go. And I'm like, you live at home and are driving a nicer car than I do. You're okay. We'll get you through.
Yeah.
No, but it's quality of life is huge. And
right.
You can't tell me someone that breaks their hip has a better quality of life afterwards. So if we can get these patients treated, that never happens.
Well, and you mentioned cardiovascular disease. You know, whenever we're doing that bone density test, if we can incorporate VFA, or it's easy to see if you're looking at a CT scan, that abdominal aortic calcification load is a tremendous indicator for potential cardiovascular disease. We should be giving that information. We've got important data that needs to be shared throughout the patient's care experience.
Yeah. I mean, there's good stuff out there too on low dose chest CTs, and I'm using that in identifying osteoporotic bone with there and transmitting too. So
are you saying this is kind of an expansion of what a bone health specialist could actually look at when they're looking at a patient in this?
Well, from an embryonic standpoint, blood cells are made from bone. It's not just structure. We're not just different from a jellyfish because we have bones. We have blood that comes from it. Our immune system comes from that. Energy storage and production. So diabetes is related to bone. Cardiovascular disease is related to bone because I'm laying calcium and plaque in the arteries instead of storing it in the bone like I should. Fracture risk. There's a lot of things that hinge around bone. And bone is really a big endocrine organ, quite frankly.
Right. Yeah. I recently had a conversation with an endocrinologist about that very thing, and that was kind of a revelation for me being a non-clinician.
No, it's not. It's a bone, and you put metal in it, and everyone.
Well, that I understand. Yeah. Bone broke, bone fixed. Being an old orthopedic guy, I get that. Yeah, no, you're blowing my mind with this endocrinology stuff, man. I'm telling you.
Well, and you know, that's part of that transition from fee for service, because procedures are always paid at a higher rate.
Right.
Than what wellness care is.
Right.
So that value-based care, I think bone health really lends credence to value-based care. It doesn't really detract from the procedure side, but really there's not many orthopedic surgeons that would rather come in on call and stay up till midnight fixing a broken bone.
Right.
They would much rather do an elective case.
Yep.
You know, no one wants to be on call. I mean, even the traumatologists would like to work.
But fractures wait for no one, right?
Right.
So if we can head this off before they fracture, that would be the epitome of value-based care, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And if we can use technology, you know, whenever we talk about optimization, part of the challenge with optimization is there's normally a relatively short window between decision to do a joint implant and scheduling surgery.
This is becoming a hot topic, preoperative optimization. When I was at the academy, there was, I wouldn't say a huge amount of conversation about it, but for the first time, I'm starting to hear this. at the Orthopedic Academy. And I think that that's a new place. And what would you say in the conversations, the early conversations I've had with surgeons about this is, well, you know, I'm not going to, it's not going to slow me down. Nobody wants to stop. Right. You know, a patient that comes in that says, I need my knee done right now, you know, and they're in pain versus the patient that comes in maybe 18 months before they want to have surgery or just, you know I'm on this path. Where am I? I'm not ready. Well, they're perfect for that. Right. And, but someone who comes in and is about to have a total joint wants a total joint right now. I'm hearing a lot of reluctance on the part of orthopedic surgeons where they just don't realize that this can be done in parallel, not necessarily in series. Right.
Jared, how long do you think you see an average patient that is ultimately going to end up with a primary hip or knee? How long do you work them through the process before there's a surgical determination?
Like just for an elective patient, general elective patient, you mean?
Yeah.
I mean, it's how far are we booking out? So if it's the end of the year, it's a month out. It can be as much as, you know, 6 weeks out. Right now it's kind of a slow period, so it's 2 or 3 weeks.
How often do they show up?
Places are much farther out.
How often do they show up though, a year or two or three earlier and say, you know what, I've got this knee pain. Well, your x-rays aren't quite ripe yet. Let's try to palliate this. Let's do some PT, maybe some injections. Let's get a few more birthdays on you before we put a new joint in you. I mean, my experience is these patients sometimes are in the system for 5 to 10 years before they're ready for a joint.
Yeah, I mean, if I have a patient I'm seeing for knee pain and they're over 65, I take a look and see if they have a DEXA. And if it shows that they have low bone or osteoporosis, I start that conversation now. You know, especially if they're a heavy smoker, you know, heavy steroid user, those types of things that put them at higher risk. Because again, I really think that optimization is a touch point, you know. I don't know if we're ever going to get to the point where you can make an orthopedic surgeon wait 6 months.
No,
but on medications, there's probably some, you know, the one where you get their Fraxworth out of DEXA's 20.
Well, I could see that in spine where it's much more critical in that, in that regard, but the joint surgeons I talk to are like, I'm not slowing down. No, I get it as far as it being a problem, but I'm not going to slow this down. Right.
And it's tougher to get the data. And we haven't had a concerted effort too, but a lot of the data comes out of the spine literature, right? The 6 month number is the spine literature. In arthroplasty, we don't have those numbers yet. We use that number because it makes sense, but practicality is, are we going to have worse outcomes if you started a month afterwards? You know, we don't know that yet. My personal take is that as long as I get in sometime and you like it sooner rather than later, we can, let's try and build bone around that implant versus before. I mean, ideally it's before. If you can get those patients that are in the system for a year or two, they got the knee pain, it's starting to wear down, they know that that's coming, absolutely. You know, jump on them, get them going, get them moving. I mean, those patients too are already hitting them up for getting physical therapy 6 months out because they do better postoperatively. So why not do that with bone?
Yep.
Well, this is an interesting space because on the technology side, now there are technologies that are coming to market. They're slowly but surely getting regulatory approval. I'm talking about CT for, you know, vertebral compression fracture or just, you know, bone mineral density. But now on the x-ray side, being able to flag patients with that first x-ray, that first image they get when they come in the door and begin the optimization process immediately if there's an issue with that. So these, you know, these technologies are coming, they're here to a certain degree. How do you think that that could change this conversation relative to optimization?
If you don't have the people to use the technology, it won't change anything.
There you go.
Yeah. And once you have the people, I think that the earlier we catch these people, the higher our probability of reducing fracture risk. So not only do we meet the goals of bone optimization, we meet the societal goals and the organizational goals of fracture risk reduction.
So it's a really, you know, it's an integrated kind of larger model that we really need to start talking about, because at the front end, we have the technology to find these people. And which would be a perfect time to begin the optimization process, even if it's a month before surgery, right? Mm-hmm. You know, but we don't have the people to manage that. Is that what you're saying, Jared?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of what Dudley, you know, when he came to me about ASAP was we need to educate more people to do this. You know, like I said, we have our region is southwestern Minnesota. It's myself and one endocrinologist are trying to take care of these people. You know, primary care does it, but you know, once you get out of oral bisphosphonates or zoledronic acid, they're just not, they don't use a lot of the medications. You know, you get the one every once in a while that's okay using denosumab, but you know, the fracture patients need anabolics and they aren't comfortable doing that. Plus the, you know, working with insurance preoperatively too on these medications or after fractures, it's a pain, right? You know, I don't know how many pills that I feel here, Dudley, you do the same too. So being comfortable with these medications is another big piece. So part of that education is saying, this is what the medications do. The psych get comfortable with them. Can we treat these patients?
You know, I see this as a continuum of care. And really the American Society of Osteoporosis, our goal is to do osteoporosis. We don't do surgery.
Yeah.
We don't do risk optimization. We train people. We help the system reach a capacity that it's never seen before. And that requires a lot of moving parts from C-suite education to integration of the technologies, a new army of providers to treat a tsunami of patients for optimal outcomes down the road.
Right.
And we have to do that. And I firmly believe that there's a financial pathway to do this, but to help educate the provider community in the C-suite that bone health is a net loser. I hear that all the time. It's not.
Yeah.
If it's done correctly and you have the right matrix, this is a profitable service line. And I think that's our mission, is to do osteoporosis and bring this into the fold of risk management like we do for every other chronic disease state, with the appropriate overlaps of orthopedics, endocrinology, rheumatology, family practice, internal medicine. We're all playing off the same sheet of music. We all ultimately have the same goals. We just need to all sing the same song so we get to the right place.
Well said. Thank you. And Jared, any, I'm going to, as we wrap this up, Jared, any final comments on that?
No, I think Dudley did a right job. I think it's just getting that message out there that this is good for everyone. It's good for the patient. It's good for your health system. You know, that's part of our job here too, but that, I think that message is slowly getting out there. You know, we have residents in our facility that come in from, you know, the big house out east, and when they come in and they see that we have a fracture clinic here, they said every place needs this, and they all get it. They all get that it's important. So I think the residents are hearing about it more. So you're hearing it a lot more people coming out of training that appreciate this. But again, if you don't have people to treat it.
Yep.
You know,
yep. And that's the challenge, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, this has been great, you guys. I you know, a lot of issues here, you know, but as ASOP is pushing off and trying to bring, I think what I would call is more of a platform approach to osteoporosis, right? That's the all encompassing, that takes into account all of the different issues and different functions, from education to everything else, patient, provider, sustainability. I think that the new model that is coming, I think, is going to be quite successful, but it's going to take some time, obviously. But I look forward to working with you guys in the future on this. So Jared Torkelson and Dudley Phipps, thanks a lot for sharing your thoughts with us on this really important topic. Thanks, you guys.
Thanks, Peter.
Thanks, Peter.
All right. Take care.
The Bone Health Basement Tapes are a presentation of the American Society of Osteoporosis Providers and the Digital Bone Health Study Group. Check us out at www.theasop.org.